Welcome to the Ether. Today is Saturday, December 11th, 2021. This is part two of a sci-fi space talking about exploits, bugs, proposals, Luna stuff, Terra stuff, all that cool stuff. Let's take a listen.
About some of that, but exactly how that's going to play out in the actual market, like how is, once you have like Y-Luna and P-Luna out on TerraSwap and on Astroport, like, how are people going to value these things exactly? I'm not sure it's fully clear, right? So, there's probably going to be situations where Y-Luna is, let's say, undervalued, and you're going to be able to say, hey, I'm going to go get some of that. And then other times when maybe P-Luna is undervalued, and you'll be able to get some of that. So it's going to be one of those things where in any given moment, you may actually get a better deal by getting P Luna or Y Luna as opposed to just straight Luna at that moment. You see the difference here? Yeah. So there's going to be some like trading opportunities.
Self-arbitraging of sorts of.
Yeah. So like if let's say you get one day you get Y Luna cheaper and the other day you get P Luna cheaper and then you somehow like merge the two and you form Devastator, unless the Transformers analogy. I think it depends. Like, even then, how do you know? Like, let's say Luna's price is going up, and how do you know you're going to get P Luna cheaper in order to be able to like refract it back and all that? So, yeah, I don't know like that all the strategies as far as trading and how do you like multiply your Luna doing this is fully worked out. I think the simplest thing is still the Stator auto compounding situation, or the LP pool, the essentially lossless LP pool, are going to give you quite a lot.
Do you know what the return is on the LP pool, or have the
straight staking for everyone? Like if you're just doing Stator, you're probably making let's say 10.5% for the year. Mm-hmm. Let's say in new Luna, which is not bad if you think about it. That's a pretty good yield if you over time. The LP for Luna B Luna typically like jumps anywhere between like 10% and 20%. So usually it's more than straight staking, because if you can imagine what happens is the reason why people would exit the Luna bonded Luna pool is if the yield falls substantially below 10%, let's say it's 5, there's no incentive to leave it there, right? You might as well straight stake it. So people are going to leave that pool and then the yields start to rise again. The other reason why the yields tend to be high on that pool is because a lot of people, like between their borrowing and their use of Luna, they're swapping arbitrage there. So let's say I'm on Kujira, for example, and I make a 10% discount buy on my Luna, right? Even though B Luna to Luna may charge me 3% going backwards, I could still go backwards, lose 3% of my Luna, still have 7% gain from my Kujira buy, and I can still sell it immediately and made immediate 7%, right?
Yeah.
So there are reasons why people are going to go backwards on that B Luna Luna pool, even though it's like what looks like it's disadvantageous to you. So the transactions are pretty substantial on that pairing, which is why the fees for being an LP provider are pretty decent, actually. They're actually fairly high. So I think it'll typically run between 10 and 20%. So if all you wanted to do is like not touch anything and you just wanted to like make your percentage APY, the B Luna Luna pool is a pretty good way. And it has been all year long. How that's going to play out, by the way, when more of the transactional activity goes to Astroport, the APYs on the one hand could go down because not as much transactions are taking place. On the other hand, it could go up because not as many participants are in the mix, right?
Yeah.
So it's like it's hard to tell what's going to play out on that. But I'd be curious also what happens to the B Luna discount arbitrage I would think it gets you're going to get better discounts in theory because less people are participating in the pool. That I'm not 100% sure.
So just are you familiar with Grim Finance on the Phantom blockchain at all?
No. What does it do?
Oh, well, it's like an auto compounder. So anybody who's ever been on the Phantom blockchain, they do sort of like not really arbitrage, but they basically, because the transaction fees are so cheap on the blockchain, they basically are like a bot that basically auto compounds on any sort of protocol that gives you a set amount of, you know, yield. And then how often it'll troll like every 20 minutes and reclaim your reward and then restake it for you automatically. So you can get into a situation. You were talking about this earlier, I think, on an earlier discussion, where if you're your own auto compounder, and let's just say you do it daily versus you do it weekly versus you do it monthly, your percentage of gain goes up. Like, you can calculate things like that. And like on Grim Finance, they'll do it like every 20 minutes. So you could take like a 300% yield, which is still ridiculous, and then turn it into like 1,000% yield. Obviously, not accounting for fluctuation in, you know, the coin price and all the, you know, the liquidity pool and potentially a permanent loss. But, you know, it's things like that. I'm just going to be, I'd be curious to see, you know, if the transaction fees are going to be too high on the USD network versus if people will be moving in that direction, because it's been quite successful actually on that side, on that blockchain.
Yeah, I don't know. The fees on the Phantom network are in Phantom, or are they in some stablecoin?
In Phantom.
Yeah, that's where you get into the. So this has been brought up actually as an interesting point for everybody, in case you hadn't heard this argument. Somebody else brought this up too. I don't remember if it was Fildo or somebody like on one of these forums said this, that the problem with scaling with any of the networks whose primary token, let's say the Phantom token, is what you pay in fees, is you get the Ethereum problem where you're like, oh, my gas fee is like, you know,
yeah,
you know, 0.5 ETH or something, you know?
And, yeah, exactly.
So you're like, it's like a curse to have the coin price appreciate to some extent, because you're creating demand for the coin in a sense that the coin is how you'd use transactions on the network. It's almost like I bought Kujira coins because I'm going to spend them on Kujira, right? But the flip side is, if the price keeps going up in reference to whatever it is you're doing with that coin, if it doesn't scale, like the cost doesn't scale appropriately, then it creates like this weird crisis eventually. So that's part of the reason, like, why I haven't messed with other networks. I do like the fact that the transactions on Terra get done in UST, and that's a fixed value, so that even if like 10, you know, years from now, maybe if it, you know, validation became more expensive, they could vote to like raise the fee in some nominal way in UST, but they're not raising it to like, you know, half an ETH or something, you know, where it gets.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, but let me get Loon Ambitious on here.
Thank you.
You guys are waiting a bit. Yeah, go ahead, man. Are you there? Sometimes we go long enough that someone like falls asleep or something. Or 80s Mike, if you're there, either one. 80s Mike or.
Hello.
Yeah, what's up? Go ahead.
Hey, I was just wondering, I'm not really across White Whale yet. Is that going to affect the B Luna Luna arbitrage opportunity? Are they getting involved in that at all?
They mentioned it like on some chat or something somewhere where they might be looking at somehow arbing that. And it makes sense that they would. I don't think they're going to do it with their first version though. So
no, yeah, yeah.
So at some point down the line, that could disappear. So yeah, it's the natural state of things that, like, if an arbitrage is too good to be true, that what will end up happening is that like someone will take advantage of it with a bot at some point.
Exactly. I mean, at the moment, it's just the fact that the liquidity is not enough that it exists. Right? You get those spikes where your opportunity pops up, and it just seems, I suppose, inefficient. And somebody's going to capture that, right?
Sure. Yeah. And let me see if Loon Ambitious is here, because I don't know if he's there or not. He's got the little, like, penguin bird-looking face there. There you are.
Hey, what's up, man?
What's going on?
Not much. I was going to try to help out earlier with the guy that was needing help with Terra Station, but sounds like he figured that out. And also the guy earlier, we're talking about arbitrage between the stable coins with the Gridbot.
Yeah.
On Gate, they do have the UST as an option.
Oh, and yeah, they do now.
Yeah.
Nice. And actually, and you, what you want with that is you want to basically run that with two different coins that tend to move like with a lot of volatility. So correct. If UST is super stable, it may not be as good.
Correct.
But
for someone that has a lot of money and wanted to throw it at it, it could make some decent profit. I think the APY I put $50 in was running.
You know what I would do? 100%. You know what I would, actually, if UST is on there and it's really stable, you know what you might want to do is pick a really narrow range for the actual difference, so that you're you know, in other words, the grid increments are so tiny that you're the amount of money per increment is really high. So what ends up, does that make sense?
Kind of, but I was thinking opposite. I was thinking a wider, like doing just like real narrow with like a 3-spot grid or 4-spot even.
Oh yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I mean, it's not the grid. I meant the grid, the range, not the number of increments.
Gotcha. Okay.
Like the range you could put super narrow because the range is, you're not going to range very much is, I guess, my point. But
correct.
Yeah. So anything you do like that actually ends up supporting the peg too on each of those exchanges that has those things.
Yeah. And I was just saying, anybody that has quite a bit of UST sitting, I think that could be pretty good. I mean, if you had time and money both.
Yeah, and it's essentially risk free. So
exactly,
if you're doing well with it, you know, it's probably going to be better than your anchor yield. Exactly. And it's not as complicated as doing like a, you know, grid against moving targets like Atom or something, you know. So yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, I haven't even bothered to do a stablecoin grid personally. Now that he told me about it, I was going to go and play with it afterwards.
Check it out, man. A lot more than I got. So check it out.
I've got a Gate account. So I did want. I was interested in trying it. Now that you said that you have UST on there, now I'm really interested.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's pretty sweet.
$5 withdrawal fee to withdraw UST.
The withdrawal fees aren't too crazy. It depends on how much you're moving. Yeah, but it doesn't even make sense to do stablecoin grids unless you're dealing with a fair amount of money. Exactly. Like if you're not really probably doing like I don't know what the right amount is, but there's a number below which it just becomes like not worth it probably. I don't know what that number is with the fees and such, but
like I said, if you have time though, I mean, you can set it, kind of widen it out and just let it sit. And then you're kind of playing on both sides of the fence and you're still always constantly making sales.
Yeah. And the other thing you can do, by the way, is you can run multiple with the same coins and you can essentially create like different strategies and test to see which one works best.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you've determined, hey, look, I've run these for 3 days and like this grid arrangement seems to have much better output, then you optimize on that.
Cool, man. Well, that was all I really had to say. So
Nice. Definitely. I got some pretty good ideas from these guys today to try some things. I was surprised at how much APY he was getting on just stable coins. 100% damn good for such a simple, low risk strategy. But anyway, anybody else on that has any alpha or things that are going on or whatever? I think.
Just one more question. Do you not see the Kujura opportunity to maybe be a better opportunity compared to the BLUNA ARB? You know, if you look at Kujura, I don't know how long it's been up, 6 weeks or something, and you know, the BLUNA 9% pool has emptied 7-8 times. So that's, you know, 9% plus, you know, whatever LUNA bounces back to within the hour or what have you.
Right. Now, keep in mind, like, the last few emptied out elements were that bug that was happening with the Oracle. So
sure. It's
not clear that you'll get that frequently, but you may be right. Like, the only thing is, it depends. Remember, like, when you do Kujira, you're getting LUNA at some sort of price, but, not necessarily the exact price that you want it. Like, for example, let's say
I agree.
Let's say you have a bid on Kujira right now and it goes like up, like Luna goes to $80 and it drops to 70 again. And then you got it, you know, you got the thing to fill at 75. But today's price is 60, right? Like you don't know for sure when this takes place. Whereas with the other methods that we talked about in terms of multiplying Luna, like they're more consistent. Like they're almost they're pretty much guaranteed for the most part.
Yes. So yeah. I agree with that. Yeah. Yeah.
And the Kujira arb also keep in mind there's another element too. There's an element of you're presuming new capital's coming in and you're not selling. Like you're presuming you'd have to sell the Luna that you got at a discount in order to sort of like deploy this strategy again and again. Whereas with the Luna arb or the APY from the liquidity provision or even Stator, you're basically not having to put any new cash in. That's the big difference.
Yeah, yeah. But I suppose the way that I've kind of seen it is, you know, you have a certain amount of capital on Kujira. And then, you know, once the liquidation occurs, you then go to market at some point, you sell whatever to get your initial capital back. And then you've essentially achieved free Luna.
Yes.
For whatever's spare. Right. And
if you have, obviously if you have Luna sitting in wait to sell, yes, you could do that, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on whether or not you, whether or not, you know, how long you want to hold it, I suppose, too, you know. So as you said, you don't control the buy price, you know, maybe you bought it at 50 and 50 may be a good price, but it may be a bad price, right?
Right.
So and that determines whether or not you're going to hang on to it for, say, a week and sell it when you know it's going to kind of come back up or if you think you need to get rid of it straight away. But I feel like if you set, you know, a DCA of pools, I don't know, to me, I've only had a couple of goes at it, but it seems like it's a better opportunity than the ARB.
It's been, when it works for you, it works well. And the thing about Kujira, if you think about it, is like the beautiful thing about how it works is, when are people most likely to get liquidated? It's most likely when there's a massive price drop. When are you normally wanting to buy Luna? When there's a massive price drop.
So exactly. Discount too.
Yeah, you're getting a discount on your discount. And on top of that, you could then, your new Luna that you get, by the way, you could burn for 21 days and do the B Luna ARB again and get another 2%.
Well, exactly.
Easily too. So within a month, you can add one other 2% there if you wanted to. So there's, there's different like techniques to deal with that. Or the flip side would be you could just basically sell that Luna that you got immediately by converting the B Luna to Luna, even though you took like a 3% loss for the quick burn. And then you could basically just pocket the other 5% and then like call it a day and then redeploy that on Kujira again or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is better than an ARB that you could get, right? You're not going to get that, but you don't have control as to, you know, as you said, the price and also when, you know, it's going to probably happen while you're sleeping, right?
That's usually when
the price drops.
Yeah. It depends on how much you want to like babysit the thing. And one of the things that's nice about the, like Luna B Luna pair has been that people love is there's no like constant taxable event in a sense, right? You enter an LP, the LP tokens value goes up. You sell LP and you're done, right? And you could let that run for years and just let it go. You don't have to do a damn thing. You're making plenty of money.
So I do wonder if there could be a protocol that literally just exists for that B Luna opportunity. You know, if Whitewell aren't going to pick it up, because essentially B Luna should be one Luna, right? So anything less is money on the table. It's just time. Right. So a protocol could exist that batches the B Luna return.
I've heard two arguments for bonded Luna, actually. One is that, like you said, that maybe they should be close to 1-to-1. I've also heard the argument that B Luna technically is like a liquid Luna, so it should be worth slightly more than Luna. And then I've heard the other argument where, okay, because it takes unstaking time, So technically speaking, BLENO should be worth less because it's technically has to be unstaked, right? Normally you have to burn or unstake it. So that would make it maybe worth a little bit less. So what is the actual value of it? It's sort of just a market, you know, it's more arbitrary in that sense.
Well, I agree. I mean, the market's deciding that Luna is worth more than BLENO because you can't get it for the other way around, can you? You know, exactly. it never happens. So the market's decided.
Yeah, the directionality has created like this situation. It's kind of artificial, but yeah, it's there.
But if you had a protocol that sold Luna for BLUNA at say 99, you'd get all of the swaps. Everyone would want that, and then you've got that 1% where you're then doing the 21-day burn, and there's your revenue. You know,
right. a lot of different ways to look at it too. Like people that like which strategy you use is going to tend also to be a propensity towards, for example, whether you intend to ever borrow off your Luna, right? Whichever one's going to allow you to quickly move into a borrower position or not is also a possible consideration. Because let's say, for example, you know, if Luna drops a whole lot more than it is now, well, then I'm going to start borrowing the shit out of my bonded Luna and basically start buying more Luna just straight up. Like, no arbitrage. Mm-hmm. It's that. Like, at the end of the day, because I could just basically get a ton of it. And then on top of that, the BLUNA's price also the discount tends to be better during volatility. So sometimes I don't even wait for Kajira. I just go and get a whole lot more off borrow and then go that route instead. So, like, the opportunities tend to vary by the moment.
Yeah, I agree. And by the dip, right? You know, dips, like that one the other day, you know, wasn't a dip, and then Kajira made it a dip anyway. Or not Kajira, but
Anchor did.
Anchor did, yeah. So
interesting.
But thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, cool. It's fun. Phil, what's up? Or Phildo Baggins. This trips me up.
Yeah, what's up, man? How you doing?
Go ahead. Yeah, good.
So I had some alpha. I don't know if anyone else caught the Delphi stream the other day. But I'm not really like an NFT guy, and I figure it's okay to shill a project that's on Terra. But this is not financial advice. So it was a Angel Protocol collaboration with CryptoPunks, like the original CryptoPunks, and it's AngelPunks. And it was RestoreEarth.io. If you donate $100 or over $100 USD, you get a tax receipt that they send you to make it easy so you could write the whole thing off your taxes, and you're guaranteed to be minted an Angel Punk. So that was like a pretty like cool minting opportunity from what I've seen, which like I'm very cautious of NFTs.
Okay, interesting. Cool. Excuse me. Wabi, what's up? Or Wabi the First.
Hey, what's going on, brother? Can you hear me clearly?
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, what's up, man? I just wanted to give a little story on how I found Luna. So I got into crypto in late 2017, and I bought right at the top. And talking about like sentiment and euphoria and everything, it's kind of like now you have something that goes beyond. Hold up, give me one moment, man. Anyways, I caught my train of thought. My bad, man. You have something that goes beyond the general euphoria. Like when you saw in the summertime after the whole Elon thing went off, you had Spell, you had OHM. And you even had Terra expanding like Pylon protocol and things like that. So I think now like the market is kind of in a stage that even if we do have like a cool down period, I think some ecosystems are still gonna have their tokens that can still run up, man, you know? Like I'm really excited for Prism. That's one that I'm really, really excited about. And just like a side thing, I actually found Luna a little over a year ago after it got listed on Binance. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was like all in on Atom, and then I went over to Staking Rewards because I saw how Luna was built using Cosmos Tech, and I saw that the rewards were significantly higher than Atom at the time. And you know, I unbonded some Atom and I sold the majority of my Atom to Luna, and I pulled every nook and cranny, working two full-time 9-to-5s, maxing out credit cards, taking out loans. And the only thing that I knew about Terra was that they wanted to build their own stable coin, and that Doe went to like some fancy school, and some like giga brain guy. It was like a photo of him crossing his arms and stuff. He was wearing like a black shirt or whatever.
Yeah.
And then like it was kind of like buy and forget. And then like the Novogratz news comes out.
Right.
And that's when I started really doing my due diligence. But
a lot of the like Coinbase Ventures, you know, Galaxy, and quite a few folks actually threw in some venture money with TFL fairly early, actually. So it wasn't actually like fresh news, except that, you know, you discover this after the fact. I don't necessarily recommend like just like hero worship and shit. Like, you know, like Doe's a regular guy like the rest of us to a large extent. So don't get too caught up in that. In other words, don't allow that to cloud your judgment just because you like the founder or whatever, from the perspective of like criticizing a protocol or whatever appropriately. So like, don't, but yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah. It, like you found a lot of conviction very early on, which is great. It's hard to do that, actually, because there's a lot of things we can find conviction in that are stupid too, and it's always good when our conviction turns out to be right.
Yeah, and just to like make this like quick. It's my first time like speaking on a space, by the way, so I'm a little bit like nervous.
No, you're cool.
But anyways, so then like during the whole like May cascade or anything, like believe it or not, like I didn't flinch an eye, dude. Like I never really interacted with Anchor until well after that. I had gotten into the Pylon IDO. Mm-hmm. And I think like that IDO really kicked off kind of like a movement, despite what happened with the team and everything, like not really having the smooth follow through with the original plan, which was non KYC swaps. But I still like the whole like lossless investment thing.
Yeah.
And that's when I really started like digging exactly what Terra was, you know?
Well, and yeah, no, like for a lot of people like yourself, you know, it's the DeFi environment. Sometimes what happens is like the first chain you get on is like the first one that you learn enough stuff on it that it becomes like not worth it to go and mess around on seven other chains, because it's just too much, takes too much time, right? Like if you think about how much time it takes for you to learn each one of the things on Terra, it's time consuming, especially with a growing chain with lots of things happening. So, you know, each of these protocols are going to have their like issues, and like none of them are going to be particularly perfect. And the entire concept of like the IDO space too has been evolving in terms of how launches happen. And you notice how White Whale's launch is very different. Astroport's is very different. Stater's is different. You know, that I don't know if you got the conversation that Jose Macedo and I had as far as like, you know, tokenomics and stuff is concerned. Mm-hmm. But basically the concept was that you're trying to build sort of a community with those protocol launches. You're trying to like create a tokenomics where the primary user of that protocol is going to get the greatest amount of sort of like reward, even initially. So for example, on Stater, they wanted you to stake Luna with them to earn their token. Why? Because then you know how it is to participate on their particular platform. If you look at how, I don't know, like, for example, who's the other one? Yeah, like Astroport's doing it. The way they're doing it is, like, if you're an LP provider, then you get the Astro token, right? So the rewards are trying to be arranged to greater benefit the user of that protocol, because it doesn't necessarily make sense for, like, Talos to drop a ton of airdrops to the entire Luna community automatically if their goal is to sort of attract people to Talos. It makes sense to, like, give out more of the initial token to people that maybe participate or mint NFTs or, you know, some other community activity. That's kind of the direction. But yeah, if people have been around Terra for a while, you'll notice that there are a lot of projects who've had rocky starts, and a lot of times they're pretty transparent groups of people. It's not like they're trying to, you know, give you a bad experience. Like Star Terra had issues, and the crazy thing is they're an actual launch pad and they had issues. So, and then you know, there's a lot of bad blood in the actual, like, Twitter sphere, and everyone's sort of bitching about something. But yeah, I think I get the sense that most protocols have tried to do a good job, whether they, like, made everyone happy or not. I think the evolution of that, and now that you're seeing over the years more and more DeFi platforms coming out, people don't want to see pump and dumps. They don't want to be the bag holder of some, you know, coin that goes up and then it goes down 80%. Like, look at Valkyrie's token price, a good example. Now is probably a good time to get a little bit, maybe, you know, but not necessarily when it was initially released. So, you know, White Whale sort of learned from that same concept. And, you know, the proper price of buying White Whale token might be next month. It might be the month after that. You don't really know, because they're starting the price high and letting the price fall, right? Did you notice that on White Whale, Wabi?
I looked at it. I think they're trying to do some, like, LBP kind of thing.
Yeah.
And as far as, like, tokenomics go, I've participated in just about every chain. And honestly, I don't really think Solana deserves that spot, you know.
Really? Like, what do you find negative about it?
The evaluation compared to Terra overall, and the overall, like, smoothness of Terra, it's just one click of a button. Everything is very front-end friendly. And speaking of oracles, by the way, let me just say that Anchor Protocol is probably one of the best DeFi protocols, like, ever.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I've used Aave, I've used Joe, I've used Alchemix on ETH, and nothing compares to Anchor, hands down. And just like seeing Solana that high, it reminds me kind of like, it's like a glorified EOS, in my opinion, man.
They also had another DDoS attack, so that's not.
Yeah, and oh good, yeah, so where I was getting at with Solana, my bad, brother. They had a huge Oracle issue. I can't remember their platform, but it's a derivatives platform, and everybody who was long on BTC got liquidated because their Oracle price. They don't even have an Oracle. Like, it's not, their Oracle isn't even, like, mainnet. I don't even know where their price feeds come from. But I think this was during during peak Solana FOMO, dude. Like, I got Instagram messages asking if they should buy Solana. And during the summertime, like, the only thing I really had my eyes on was Sandbox and Mana, which were other tokens that I bought, like, this time last year too.
Sure.
I would always buy those on the sides too, because, you know, I've always been a gamer. And the Bitcoin price ended up going somewhere to like 6K, 5K. So every single
they got screwed. Yeah. So yeah, you're saying that basically the Oracle incident that Anchor just had isn't unique only to this blockchain. It's happened to other people. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but when it comes to something as like mainstream as Solana, like you are starting to have like the Matt Damon commercials playing in some movie theaters at that time. Back when like crypto.com started their whole like mainstream commercial stuff.
Right.
And you had Steph Curry and that Steve Harvey guy and a few other celebs show Solana, like Jason Derulo, like at the top, at the very top of that summer rally. He said Solana on his Twitter, and I'm like, dude, that's crazy. And then literally at that same time frame, everyone gets liquidated, man.
That's when all the newbies are coming by, right? With the
I think honestly, man, the only thing that Terra would need,
in other words, you're saying if like the weekend's fucking buying Luna, then we're fucked, basically. So
I think it'll get to a point. I think it'll get to a point at like, I think, in my opinion, man, I think Terra is going to do what Ethereum did last bull run, where it's going to be like the strongest blue chip and have the strongest bull off top and be shilled by everybody. Just as how Solana was, that's in my opinion, what Luna could do, you know, because if you really think about it, man, the people that are passionate about Terra are the inner circle community. It's not going to be us that's going to pump Luna to $200, $150, whatever price it's going to be at the top. It's going to be like fresh new capital, you know.
Yeah, I do like the fact that though we don't have like just some bullshit ghost chain. So like it's not like Cardano that doesn't have any actual economic activity on it. So the beauty of having actual economic activity already is it creates a tremendous amount of like holding pressure, transactional value. The emergence of Stater, Prism, and some of these other things also create utility for Luna directly. And we've had kind of a stair-stepping volume on Terra, which is actually good. And I think we're building a much, much nicer floor to Luna's price than Ethereum ever had, like in 2017. Like Ethereum 2017 was like, there was no other alternative. It was like cult of Vitalik, and we basically had nothing else to buy except Ethereum and a few other, you know, Bitcoin forks or whatever. And everything just went completely, you know, bonkers. I mean, to this day, the Litecoin people are like, oh yeah, we're waiting for $5,000 Litecoin. I'm like, get out of here. Like that shit's not happening anytime soon, right?
So yeah.
Back in the day, like that's what happened with Ethereum. Literally was nothing on it. It was basically a ghost chain too at the time, and it pumped to infinity because like there was nothing else to buy, and everyone just sort of aped into it. And
it was the ICOs, man. It was
There was the ICOs.
The CRX.
Yes. The ICOs did make that effect as well. A bunch of bullshit coins, essentially. It was basically like a .com bubble of. You know, pets.com back in the day, back in the late 90s.
I remember during I first got into DeFi was through Ethereum, like anybody else. And I remember the first like ETH DeFi tokens that I bought, and I had no idea what they really were. I only went by what this one dude called Chico Crypto would say. And he sounded really cool, dude. This was like late 2019, and to my knowledge, dude, he was the only person talking about DeFi. And I remember I bought my first DeFi, like first ever DeFi tokens. Like, one was REN, which used to be called Republic Protocol.
Right.
And then the other one was called Enigma. And then the other one was called IExec or RLC. And then at that time, I also found Uniswap. And then, believe it or not, dude, I tried buying Hex. I tried buying Hex and like the last days of 2019, That's when I started using Uniswap, and I tried buying HEX, but I wasn't smart enough to actually paste the contract address. It was I was that green, you know. And
so you've been around a while, so you've kind of picked up. So like your general consensus on Terra is pretty good compared to most things you've experienced. Is basically the same.
Yeah, I've also used Phantom, and I like how both Terra and Phantom, they have like a nice UI, nice front end. It's not like Curve, which is like really buggy and everything. And I think like the icing on the cake for Terra, despite what happened on the Oracle on Anchor, would be a Chainlink going mainnet on Terra. That's really the only thing. Because we all take risks when we go on DeFi. And aside from Chainlink going live on Terra, which hopefully it happens before Mars Protocol, which is the one thing that I'm really excited to use and definitely make some gains on, man. Prism and Mars are like my top two, in my opinion, man.
Yeah, my top two. Astroport's pretty strong too, by the way. It looks pretty strong for a multi-chain future.
How are the tokenomics on it? On Astroport, like, is it like low circulating?
We had a pretty broad discussion with Macedo about this like a week ago, and it was pretty like, without getting too into the weeds with it right now, it's really, really set up for people that are actually going to do LPs. So it make the more Astroport token you have, the more governance you have in terms of like directing like funds towards or incentives towards your particular LPs. And therefore, like, the bigger you are as far as an LP whale, the more likely you're going to want Astroport tokens. And the tokenomics is meant to have like a double benefit if you're both an LP provider and you're participating in the Astroport token. So it's not as useful to just some random speculator, which then creates a tremendous like holding pressure for the actual token. So yeah, it looks really, really interesting. And of course, Delphi and they're kind of the wizards at tokenomics, because they've been building so many projects, whether it's AMMs like Astroport or like what they're doing with Mars. They've been around a while and they know all the problems with Curve and, you know, Balancer and all the different, you know, Uniswap and all the different AMMs and different things out there. So they have lived through all the shenanigans of those things too, like the cartels and whatnot. And he was covering all the details. So yeah, the Astroport looks like it's just going to be like a world-class AMM compared to even, like, there's a lot of development budget behind that too. It should be exciting. So yeah, anything Delphi touches, I'm willing to follow and see what happens. But let me get Moonchild on here for a minute here. I'm waiting a while. Sorry about that. We've been just,
thank you, man.
We've just been sort of BSing here for a while.
So, appreciate you, man.
Moonchild, you there? Yeah, no problem. Just kind of doing like some banter here about random things, I guess. Moonchild probably is probably like, you know, in the shower or something now. But anyway. Oh,
Speaking of Delphi and something to do with Terra, I saw how this also goes with what you just told me about Astroport. I saw how Terra wants the Luna token to be on Tokamak, which is something that I had gotten into in early August. And so would it be possible since Astroport is going to be multi-chain, do you think it's going to be possible in the future to like use Astroport to buy like things like the Tokamak token, or somehow connect to the Tokamak? Or
clarify here, what's I don't know the first slightest thing about Tokamak, but what does it do and what's the deal?
So to my understanding, first, I'm not like
It's an L1 or like what's it generally like? It's
built on Ethereum and it's basically driving liquidity to protocols with the Tokamak token. So each Tokamak token is a unit of liquidity. So it's okay. Basically, yeah.
So it's a treasury system of some kind. Is it, or more or less. Yeah, I guess. So you're saying that they're trying to connect that to Terra so that Terra assets can be used in the Tokamak treasury. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Something along those lines. There's someone in the Terra community. His name's Bullish Bear, and he's the one who actually got me into Tokamak. And there's a lot of teams throughout DeFi like Shapeshift and their Fox token. SNX is another one. OHM is another one.
Right.
And Rune also I think they got a reactor, I'm not sure. But they basically drive more liquidity into the ecosystem, because as you saw, like right now, like Bitcoin, like without a doubt, could just capitulate to 38K and just be range bound from 38 to 42K. But because of that sharp capitulation and a lot of the liquidity right now on the altcoins could drop even more than how they are, that could cause a huge network effect and have people with like stables on the side to interact with these protocols, as we saw in the summertime with some of the NFTs and the NFT tokens, and then eventually the layer one solutions, you know. Mm-hmm. Like sometimes the downtime of the market with BTC is actually drives eventually more adoption, you know. Like I started getting really excited about Terra after the Pylon IDO. Like it was out of all the token sales and all that stuff that I've interacted with, that IDO was like so smooth, man. I remember they said it was going to be like at 10 o'clock, and I was at the gym at the time, and I'm like, oh bro, I'm gonna miss it. So I end up getting back home at around midnight, and so it got delayed, and I'm like, oh cool, I guess I still have time. And so I connect to the website, and I deposit a few thousand USD, and I'm like, oh wow, I still have time to put in more. And it went like straight through. And basically you had time to create as many wallets as you could and right. deposit even more funds. And I'm awesome. I'm like, this can't be happening. Like, it can't be this easy. It can't be that smooth.
Right. And, right. Well, I'll give an example, I believe, and I don't know if this is finalized for Prism, but I think one of the mechanisms that was discussed, and don't quote me here if this doesn't happen, but this was like the discussion early on for Prism, was that maybe the way they would allow you to participate in their IDO would be to, they'll have a certain amount of tokens allocated. Let's say it's, you know, a billion or something, whatever the number is. And they'll have a deposit pool of UST. There's no like hard time limit. You know, they'll let it run for like a week or two or whatever. And however many people deposit into that UST pool, that becomes the price discovery for the actual token, right? Like, because there's a fixed number, however much goes into it, that's how much the token's now worth divided by, you know, the amount of money that gets put into the pool, right? So then essentially, like, if you want more of the Prism token, then you throw a lot more cash into it. Now, the downside to that, I suppose, is if like mega whales throw in $1 billion, and you could have an oversubscribed system, and you could have someone, it could still dump afterwards. But that's the reason why a whale wouldn't do that, because like, why would you throw $1 billion at it? Let's just take, for example, because if there's a possibility of your capital going down in value, you wouldn't even enter. So the rationality is that when you have a deposit pool like that, and you just sort of like, and there's not even a time limit, then you don't have the problem of people rushing into it. You don't have the problem of like the protocol crashing because you can't get into it, or like bot attacks and all those sorts of nonsense, right? So that seemed like an interesting way to do it besides the way that White Whale was doing it, which is like starting the price high and letting the price fall. Incidentally, I put, I don't know if you, did you start a Pylon gateway for White Whale yourself?
I think it's KYC and I'm over here in America, so.
No, the White Whale on Pylon didn't do a KYC for me. Like I was able to just simply put UST in there and it was good to go. So,
are you talking about pools or swap?
No, the pool, like the where you do Pylon gateway. You know how you just deposit.
Oh
like,
yeah. I thought you meant the swap, man. Yeah.
Yeah. The beauty of the Pylon gateway there is my intuition is that most likely the valuation of the whale token will be high enough that like if I run that for a year or whatever it is, I think it was a year or 18 months, because I borrowed off of my Luna to do this. So, you know, since my UST is sitting there risk-free, it's acquiring me White Whale tokens, and it's been raking them in pretty good. I don't know what the final price of opening price of White Whale will be and where the price will settle, but so far the amount of like token quantity has been pretty decent so far. So we'll see how that goes. So it seems like that Pylon gateway is pretty fair if people wanted to know about it. It's working out pretty well. But there's no APY in there because there's no coin price yet, right? So like until price discovery happens, you won't know how fair it is or isn't, or how useful. So we'll see.
But I like the way Kujira launched, and I didn't buy much, but I saw how it launched at like just over a dollar. Mm-hmm. And compared to other Terra alts, I think like Star Terra and Valkyrie, they launched at like super crazy high market cap. So I like as you said, like some of the teams are taking longer to see a strategy on how they should launch, and I like how like Prism and Mars like. They're like the aces in the hole, like the nail on the head for Terra dApps, and I can kind of relate them to other alts and other ecosystems. Like I kind of think like Mars will be like the Joe of Terra, like what Trader Joe is to AVAX. Okay. I think Mars will do the same for Terra, as far as like a lot of people using it, and of course benefiting as a holder of the token, because from what I see, Mars is going to be a lower circulating supply token compared to most Terra alts. Oh, and just a fun fact. I actually bought Terra Floki, like T Floki, however yeah. you want to pronounce it.
Uh-huh.
The group that I'm in, from Bullish Bear, one of the guys posted T Floki when the market cap had like 70k of liquidity, dude. And I remember I'm like, damn, dude, should I actually put a few grand, or should I just put like just 1K? Because I remember what happened to like the real first meme on Terra, which was Dan. Did you ever see the whole Dan thing?
I'm not sure what you're referring to.
So there was this person on the Talus Protocol team. His name was Sadie something, and he created the first auto narrative dream token, and it was this thing that some people from the Terra community would write like would write like stories about Dan and his mom, and it was this weird kind of like cluster puzzle thing. And so people who would like solve riddles and add to the story, they would get deposited these Dan tokens to their tarot wallet. And within the span of a few days, one Dan token was like 20 Luna or some crazy thing like that, because the liquidity was so strong. I mean, not so strong, it was so sorry. It was so low. Yeah, sorry, dude.
Oh, that's what that Dan token was. I saw the
token
show up on TerraSwap. I didn't know. I was like, what the hell is a Dan token?
Yeah, so like before I even like connected to the website, I kind of thought like, man, this thing literally just popped up. And I started seeing the liquidity, the LP amount go up. And so I put in like $2,000, and then like I go to sleep, and when I wake up within like 6 or 8 hours, the thing did like a 10x overnight, you know. And then like like I wake up and I'm so happy, like I'm like, oh dude, finally I get lucky.
Happened? Did it go to zero or what happened?
No. Okay. No. It's even worse than that. It ends up pulling it.
It's worse than zero.
No. T Floki ends up going 30x more from that.
Oh, okay. That's funny.
Like, yeah, they have like a whole play to earn game, and they have NFTs and all that stuff. It's called Terra Floki.
Yeah, no, I know that.
Really, really cool protocol and liquidity stuff.
Yeah, so it's that's one of the things. That's one of like the tokens that are always like, man, if only I had put it in more and just waited two more days, you know? Because at the time, I was also holding Floki from the summertime after they got rugged and they came back. I started looking into meme coins, because I'm like, bro, I don't think memes are dead at all. And well, if you really
one lesson typically is, if you find it interesting in the beginning, it's almost like one strategy is just to allocate a small amount and just like don't look at it again, like or use it and participate in it somehow. But sometimes, yeah, like exiting completely, you know, if you think there might be something to it. With T Floki, you know, the only thing that bothered me about it initially is, and I'm not a huge like meme coin fan, like it's just not like, I understand why they get the traction they do, I get all of that, I'm just not a huge like, I'm just not into it. What I couldn't figure out is with T Floki, like why didn't they just build like a, they seem like creative and like interesting enough that they could just simply build some fresh new creative idea, as opposed to do like, you know, playing on the Floki meme and all
that.
Yeah,
that's how I felt too.
Yeah, I mean, didn't you like?
And
like,
it hurts them because you pitch
really,
it.
They seem really like sharp people, you know. Now in retrospect, and all the different things that they're doing, I just think it would have been more original to just, you know, do something fresh. But I don't know.
Yeah, and every person I've pitched that project to, I pretty much have to say like, I know, like actually give it exactly. A look, you know, like
yeah, because like because a lot of the Terra community, I don't think a lot of the Terra folks are like mega meme coin folks, right? Like, I mean, just by the conversations on Terra Spaces, I don't
know.
They're
usually
people
like, be careful, you're gonna get wrecked. Like,
yeah, but like a lot of the Terra folks that are around here seem a little bit more, like just a generally sharper crowd, I would say. And compared to like if you go to any forums regarding, I don't know, like Doge or Shiba or whatever, it's like the attraction is a totally different group of people. That's why I couldn't understand why the T Floki people decided to like use that meme and like, you know,
I think maybe they had a mission to prove like a meme coin can become a valid thing. Like, here's like, we're going to spit in your face for like judging us for being called like the name of a shitty meme coin.
That's what the Shiba people are doing, right? I mean, more or less. Like,
yeah,
like,
right.
Well, we're building on our token and we're doing this and that, you know, and okay,
fine. Yeah, but until I see something.
Yeah. Like,
there's so many projects, even on Terra, cool. Like yeah. We're an NFT project that will have like token utility and DeFi purposes. There's like 10 of those like on coin all right now.
Right. I mean, like, if you think about it, like, just the conversations from half the people in this room, like on any given day, you could probably, if you had developers, you could probably pitch something that people would buy, honestly. Like, you know, yeah. If, like, a lot of the ideas that we as a crowd we sort of give away for free to some extent could actually be built into some pretty cool shit probably.
This is the community I trust like by far the most. Like, I'll almost get a small amount of money. Like, if I hear like three lunatics be like yeah, like I bought this, I'm like, yeah, it's worth a little money.
Exactly, that's sort of what that, yeah, I'm with you on that. Like, I was like, hey, like, what should I buy on KuCoin? You idiots sound like you know what you're doing. So I'll just go on there and just like, I just made a list and I'm like, I'll just buy all of these.
And yeah, I'll buy a little and I'll research
30 coins on, I have like 30 coins on KuCoin right now and I bought the dips on every one of them. So now that my position's all built. So now just only one of them has to moon and it'll overwhelm all of them. Kind of.
Now you start researching and deciding which one to put money into.
Yeah, there's like 30 of them. So I'm like, you know, I don't even want to research them. Fuck it. Just let them run.
So, I agree. I agree with what you guys are saying. Like, I rode some of the Kadena hype. Like, when I saw Flamel like shill it more and more, I'm like YOLO, you know. and then I saw Crypto Susanna start shilling render token. Uh-huh. And then from render token, this other person called Purple Frog was shilling R-Fox. And
like, a dude couldn't buy it and I bought it and I'm rich as fuck.
Dude, it's like what if like the Terra community, just for like the slightest hope, what if it's like one giant decentralized market maker.
Well, yeah, that's the funny thing.
That's like, what it's becoming.
So, like, yeah, I mean, there's no question that part of why Kadena went up is because, like, you know, people use their Anchor Borrow and just hammered the damn thing. So there's no question about that. Like, I think that's a given. But yeah, but it's also interesting is if, like, if you could have lots of crowds of people, right, like rally around a meme, you could also look at it the other direction and say, you know, a really, you know, decent, sharp group of people could actually be crowdsourced information for sort of like research discovery of, you know, whatever new token is useful, right? So like, we've had conversations about Render and some of these other things and, you know, what the pros and cons of them are and things like that. So, you know, usually if you have people that are a little bit more like intuitive regarding experience with crypto, and they know how to intuit what might be a good project and what isn't, like, do you really want to research every single thing manually? How does an average person not miss something really good early on, right? Because by the time something shows up at Coinbase or on Binance, like, it's already like pumped. You've all seen like Coinbase listings and Binance listings. You're sort of getting screwed then. So if you miss something, you didn't like know that it was going to be really hot shit until it got, you know, listed, then you're sort of too late, like you said. So
yeah, I had to learn that the hard way. Like I got in from a friend, like, who suggested Coinbase, and it was right towards when the coins stopped pumping on listings and started dumping on listings. Like, there was like a very certain period where it just pivoted because like people clearly got ahead of Coinbase a little bit.
Right.
And I just was buying all the newest ones. Like, every time it would pop up, it would be like, he would text me and I'd be like, buy it quick. And over time, I'm just like, dude, I am just losing money. Like constantly. So I've shifted to like, okay, never buy anything on Coinbase because it's already way too late.
Right. And that's also why Coinbase waits a while too. They're at a point where it's like, well, their user base is so large and Binance's user base is so large. The problem is they've got to wait till sufficient liquidity exists and they have sufficient liquidity on their own platform to prevent those ridiculous spikes. And yeah, they're not that interested in screwing their customers by having those pumps and dumps either, to some extent. But it's gotten less too, because Coinbase has so many coins now. So it's like, it's people crazy. Don't pay attention. People don't pay attention.
And I think people wised up to it, like, dude, I did.
They list like 15 coins a week now, dude.
Is it that many? I haven't scrolled down in there lately on Coinbase, like, to check. But
like, I have an old bag of spell. Like, I forgot about it for a good minute, you know. And spell got listed, and you know how like the newer people, they have a low unit cost bias,
right?
So I remember when SHIB went live on Coinbase, it didn't really take long for SHIB to pull off a 10x, man.
And yeah, because nobody even knows what the number means. Like, they just sort of look at it and, oh, yeah, that looks cheap. Yeah.
You can't even count the zeros on a phone. You're like, I have like a pencil out, like trying to count these zeros. Oh my God, it was off by a tenth place. Like,
you can't even plug it in your calculator. You don't know digits or whatever.
Seppi, yeah. What's up, man?
Yeah.
I was having a conversation with my buddy the other day about time in Wonderland. And he was saying,
yeah,
you know, that all of the GameStop boys are in it, you know, and it has all the AMC investors. And I was like, bro, you have to consider that many of those people on Reddit, they might not be into DeFi. They might only have a Robinhood or an IBKR account. Like, DeFi is still this right island that you have to swim to from the mainland. It's not easy to get there, and it takes fucking courage and it takes effort. And like, everybody on DeFi Island is calling their family and saying, what a fucking party it is. You know, it's worth the dime.
That's the best example I've ever heard of DeFi.
No. Okay. So let me finish. Like, so everybody's on DeFi Island saying it's the water's warm. There's no sharks. Come on in. You know, like, you won't drown, or we'll come get you if you start drowning. And then, but the more people that swim to the island, the bigger DeFi Island grows and the closer it gets to the mainland. So like, this maximum exposure that DeFi really needs is, we need Apple Pay and Google Pay on Android to just integrate the native pay button that connects right to the Coinbase wallet, that connects right to your DeFi wallet. So then it'll be like PayPal following you around on every single website that you log into, or Amazon following you around. And so,
yeah, and I'm you guys might have noticed, by the way, that Transact was going to be integrated into Terra Station. And that looks interesting. The unfortunate problem with Transact is like the amount of money you can draw from it, and the amount of fees will just, like,
the fees are absurd.
They're absurd, so they don't make any sense. But like, that doesn't keep newbies from going, oh, I want to get into crypto, I'm going to push this button some. So it's definitely bullish for Terra to have a fiat on ramp, obviously, but it's not. I've never had much success with Transact.
Yeah, and like, nobody can deny that 2021 has been the year of the meme coin, basically.
Oh yeah, for sure.
and that every single person who has opened a new Coinbase account in the last year has either done it because they wanted to buy a meme coin, or their family was forcing them to buy Bitcoin, Ethereum, Cardano, you know, for all the Cardano heads, and then, or to buy stable coins to stake.
Right. And you know, the funny thing is, so if you're on like some of the centralized exchanges that, not just Coinbase, but Voyager and a few others, like the moment a meme coin starts to take off, they make this like gargantuan freaking effort to get that coin on there, like Shiba Inu, and then start advertising.
Yeah, the banner pops up.
Oh, the banner, the Google AdWords, you know, has
the giveaway.
Yeah, the whole shebang. And the crazy thing is, like, we've been asking for Luna, you know, and UST on Voyager for like all year, and they haven't made it happen. Yet they have Shiba Inu in like 6 seconds, right? Like, now it is easier to integrate because it's ERC-20,
But, I actually talked to them about that, interestingly, like in the Voyager group the other day. Apparently, like the dude who runs it is like not intimidated, but he's still like shifty on like UST because he's like an old school banker dude. So there's like a little bit of like resistance, and it's like disruptive to like a dude like that. So I was like, oh, okay, so it's disrupting Voyager. All right.
Yeah, and surprise, like I've been messaging them to put Anchor Protocol on forever to just let users of Voyager be able to get access to you know, the Anchor Protocol yield, and they're going in that general direction. It's just like they're kind of squeamish about integrating that stuff from a legal perspective.
The USDC is actually like pressuring them, like informally. This is not like formal information, but like apparently USDC is like no, we would rather not like have UST, obviously.
Yeah, I guess they have some kind of partnership with Circle. Is that right? Or anyway, whatever.
Their interest-bearing products are basically on USDC, and they're pretty high interest by like shit stablecoin standards, but they don't compare to even Anchor at all. So basically, if like UST pops up, like Circle's gone. So I can see why there's probably actually like a major like political issue here.
Yeah,
I
feel like they're gonna try the powers that be at Circle and whoever are gonna try to push their thing onto every central exchange they can.
Yeah, it's a goddamn bank.
Yeah,
I feel like, man, it's the same thing with Binance and BUSD. You know, the moment that UST is really on Binance and you have the superior stablecoin that you can move off of it and move to Anchor, it's gonna cut the BUSD transactions in half.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. The UST vampire attack.
Yeah.
Especially if you have like the ability to get native Anchor yield there. So like once you can transfer like CW20 tokens, which would be basically just the AUST, then like why wouldn't people on Ethereum or Binance Chain or whatever want to prefer that?
Right.
It basically all comes down to like there's zero reason like it's not superior that you can find, like unless the algorithmic part like fails, but it has done better than everything else.
Yeah. Oh, let me get Jug on here. He's been waiting a bit, or he or she. Sorry.
Yeah. a couple of comments, I guess. First thing was that analogy about swimming to DeFi Island is the best thing I've ever heard. Like,
please steal it. Please spread it around. I came up with it one night. Yeah.
That is amazing. That is the best thing I've ever heard. And then the other thing is I see Hutch on here as a listener, so shout outs to him. I think he's the one that really got me down the DeFi rabbit hole on Luna.
Hutch has got me like degenning on my life insurance policy, borrowing off of it. So,
no, but I think it's just, I've been on here listening for about an hour or something. Jump on and just say that it's amazing and refreshing to see people not really like shilling their own particular stuff, but just like giving general knowledge so generously. And it's a breath of fresh air. So that's really why, like, I was just going to stay on as a listener, but I just wanted to say that, man, because it's nice.
Hang,
so thanks.
Hang out periodically.
You know.
So
you
yeah, know, like we've had like a long afternoon, like of chatting about this and that, and we started out with like subjects specifically more about, you know, Anchor and oracles and, you know, different issues that were going on, and then I just sort of hung on, and people were enjoying bullshitting, so we're just sort of hanging out.
Dude, yeah, I was asleep. Nice. I fell asleep for like 90 minutes in the beginning of this, and then I woke up.
You're back.
Now I'm back 3 hours later. You know, and
well, the running joke, by the way, is if we run these long enough, Luna price will go up.
Right.
You just
have
to wait. So instead of looking at the price, you just stand here and bullshit for a while, and then like you just wait and look, it'll go up.
And you know what's funny is I also tell people, like, to get to DeFi Island, you what you really need is you just need that one passionate friend and then a bunch of YouTube tutorials, because with those two ingredients together, like, you'll make it to the island and you'll just start figuring it out. You know, I started on Binance Smart Chain and then using Trust Wallet, like, and then my buddy was like, you got to get on Polygon. And I tell you, I almost threw my phone on the ground. It was so hard for me just to program the RPC and MetaMask and try to bridge through Plasma that I almost broke my fucking $1,000 phone.
And that's why I'm bullish on Terra, dude. The wallet is so clean and crisp, you know? And
so you just need that prior, one friend.
Yeah.
That one friend to tell you to keep going and to check out this tutorial or that tutorial. And so then, you know, then you can just keep swimming on your own and you'll make it to the island.
Yeah, that swim will be just a little bit shorter if we have a few, like particularly in the Western exchanges. I know Newton in Canada has UST and Luna both. I'm assuming they have transfer functions. You can get crypto.com here, but what you can't get is like on like Coinbase, on Voyager, Gemini. The problem is they implemented ERC-20 versions of the tokens first, and you can't get immediate transfer functions. So once you have that available, that's just one less sort of like leap to have to go run to KuCoin, which like it just like for the newbie seems really weird for them. They're like, wait, what do you mean you can't connect it to a bank? And what do you mean I have to figure out USDC first? And there's just so many steps to explain why the hell you have to go to another exchange for this.
Right. I think, yeah. And I have that same friend that got me, that used to be ahead of me in the, you know, the DeFi Island example. He was on Polygon first. Like the other day I was trying to get him into Terra because we both got burned in the Iron Finance debacle, and he's just been like morose ever since. Right. And I, you know, I took a couple weeks off. I didn't kill myself. And and then my buddy was like, yo, I think UST and Luna are going to be something. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? And I did my research, and then I was like, okay, I'm in. And so now I'm trying to help this buddy get the Polygon friend get, you know, either wrapped Luna over from Coinbase to Terra or whatever. And we were just sitting talking for like 20 minutes, about the six different routes of going from Coinbase to Gate to Terra, Coinbase to KuCoin, KuCoin to Terra, which currency to use, you know, all of the different routes. His KuCoin was locked. Gate's Terra withdrawals were down. There were like so many fucking, you know, stop signs. And we eventually figured it out. Gate reopened their Terra withdrawals. But
right. Well, there was also the problem with Columbus 5 and everything got like, you know, I don't know when you started, but like, yeah, that created a whole like debacle of like problems for a while. Until the exchanges got their shit together,
right? But
hey guys, so
you know, trying to buy something on like a Euro stock exchange and having to fly to five different countries and use six different currencies, like, you know, all of us degens we're used to that now. We're used to converting to Atom or Harmony and then swapping between exchanges and then swapping back, and we don't give a fuck. Like we figured out all the routes to get around the regulations.
Speaking of regulations. I have a theory, and this goes together with crypto taking a true macro leg up to $8 to $10 trillion. Because I simply don't see how the Pico top of January 2018 to three trillion is that big of a deal in the broader aspect. I think short term. What you guys were referring to, like normies going to DeFi Island, is a lot harder than it should be. But there's this concept going around of So there's this like concept going around of like KYC'd wallets, and it goes along with regulations. And you see, like when exploits happen, they're token of choice to move funds around is for the most part USDT or USDC. But if these fiat on ramps and eventually most DEXs, as you see with like 1inch and stuff, once wallets are KYC'd and they have to be whitelisted within exchanges, and they'll know people's identities and information like that, I think like that touch of regulation will force these exchanges to make DeFi more accessible to customers.
Which is why, by the way, if that time is coming, that's why like my cousin overseas like keeps my ledger in his kayak, you know. So that way they're like, oh, what happened to all your money? I'm like, I don't know. Disappeared.
Yeah, I kind of feel like eventually that's going to happen. Like fiat on-ramps are going to start having to KYC. So it's like, even if you move funds from one protocol to Monero and then to Zcash, etc., and back to Bitcoin, regardless of all that wash, in order to use fiat on ramps, like your wallet for incoming transactions is going to have to be KYC'd. So I think like,
well, that, keep in mind the problem with the KYC system is there's like multiple issues, of course. One is that there's nothing preventing any entity from discovering what's in your wallet, much less, say, for example, the government. That's one problem. If you look at the CBDC problem that we've discussed numerous times too, the other problem is your wallet can be shut off literally at the flip of a switch, essentially. So this is the reason why in China right now, there's a heavy push towards having people adopt the CBDC there. Like, you know, bankers and stuff, from what I've heard, have been, you know, getting bonuses to sort of like onboard more and more people onto their CBDC. And the idea is there, you got a KYC wallet and you have the CBDC you on or whatever. And what ends up happening is if you're just like not a good communist or whatever it is, you know, you're supposed to be over there, then you can have your wallet shut down by whoever without, you know, ever having a whole lot of say in it. And, the, you know, how that works out for the government essentially is like, so you're, let's say you're a, you know, let's say you're a good government official, but you're a bad communist and you want more freedom for your people or something. You say the wrong thing on social media. Then anybody can essentially be censored immediately. And, you know, you're not going to have a whole lot of time to like form a protest because you'll just be starving to death by that point because you don't have enough, you know, funds in your, you know, you don't have enough funds to eat or whatever. So this is the problem with CBDCs is like you couple it. I've spoken to this like a month ago. The issue with the KYC wallet is it's just the entry point to not only totalitarianism at the most brutal level that you can possibly imagine, but it's an opening to totalitarianism that can be monitored and essentially executed by machine learning algorithms, and particularly those like what Google DeepMind has created could be quite bad if connected to a mixture of social media monitoring coupled with a wallet that could be shut down at a whim. So there's a lot of different punishments that could be eked out by a government, not just taxes, but a lot of other types of punishment that could be eked out like by having that kind of central control, which is why, like, you know, not to say that there's nothing particularly, it's not that nothing is good about central governments. There's obviously lots of functions they perform that prevent us from living in like some sort of, you know, barbarian anarcho-capitalist state where, you know, the most violent actor can just do whatever they want. But on the flip side, the problem is that you're giving all the levers to control everything about your life to people. And this is my concern with the combo threat of machine learning with CBDCs. I think the people that are coming up with this shit just haven't thought it out very well. All they have to do is like have me stand up and tell you how fucked up of a world you're gonna get. And I only have to imagine it to make it true, by the way, because it's simply a matter of me implementing it and annihilating as many people as I want with it for you to then realize, hey, wait a minute, I should have listened the first time. You know, so it does bother me. The direction they're going, that they're not really thinking of all the possible evils of it. Even in China, I think there's plenty of good people in China, and, you know, not all of them are, you know, not all the people that are involved in government are bad people, I'm sure. But what ends up happening is when you have all this tied to CBDCs and machine learning, like, you know, you no longer you lose human control over a lot of this. And what ends up happening is you create a system where, by the time you discover that, hey, you know what, this machine's being a little bit too harsh, you know, I don't know, maybe we shouldn't do genocide on this group. Maybe we shouldn't starve these people to death. Now you're the machine, as soon as you start saying something negative, then you become the enemy immediately, right? So
the Matrix, basically.
Yeah, kind of. It's you're but maybe in some ways worse, because at least in the Matrix, there's like a TV show where you can get out of it.
Yeah.
Whereas in this example, you're just basically just totally fucked.
Yeah, like, I'm going to be really, really angry if Bitcoin or Ethereum is not mentioned in the new Matrix movie, dude. I think we've made enough like strides where crypto right now. Like, mind you, dude, I stayed throughout the entire bear market of 2018 and became heavily participated once like the initial phases of DeFi in 2019. And I can honestly say, and this is from somebody, dude, that started becoming addicted to the space. Like, I would be awake until like 8 or 9 a.m. just digging through alpha, you know, and interacting.
Anybody in here that has a fucking, like, you know, NFT is pretty much addicted to the space at this point.
Yeah, man. Yeah,
I'm
dude.
Like, oh, let me scroll down. Let me see who's addicted right like, here.
Dude. And so I can honestly tell you, man, like, in my honest belief, I think we follow equities more now, where there's kind of like micro bear cycles and micro bull cycles. And a good example of that is the time span of December 2020 to May of 2021 and July, like late mid-July 2021 to late November. Like, those would be like micro bull cycles.
Right.
And like, now, honestly, man, like, BTC is looking like absolute, it looks like it wants to rug. Honestly, man,
it's a dump. Well, I'm with you. I've been saying the same thing. I think, and Willy Woo has said it as well, that essentially we're now in the sawtooth pattern to saturation, and what that essentially means, exactly what you said, and all you the only analogy you really have to know is like just cell phone or smartphone saturation. So if you look at like just go look at the Apple stock chart, and you look at it over the period of the last 20 years. And particularly like 2005 onwards, and that's basically what we're about to see. We have like one of the fastest adoption curves in the history of the human, or the fastest adoption curve in the history of the human race at this point, more so than the internet, more so than smartphones, more so than literally everything ever that came before it. So to say that like this time is different, and that you could use the words like paradigm and whatnot fairly safely now, is because those are usually considered the like the, you know, as soon as those words start being used, it's like, oh, we got to the top. I would disagree. I think we're going to have exactly what you're saying. And the first example was this of this happening was in May, when we had a good solid 60% to 70%, 80% dump in altcoins. And they all sort of came back afterwards, right? Roaring back. And I think you'll see that sawtooth pattern going on. That's why, like, even though Luna's price, you know, fell today, you know, and it dropped a lot too. Like, if you think about it, we were almost at $80. We're now at like 60. That's a good solid 25% dump. But and we had even worse earlier in May, and yet here we are, right? So I don't think I think we're in that sawtooth pattern of that's what a super cycle looks like. It doesn't mean you're never going to have dumps. It just means that the shorter time span, like you said, between now and when the next, you know, peak happens. You know, so, and the reason why that sort of happens is because everyone discovers that, hey, you should be hodling these things, right? Like everyone that missed Bitcoin the first time, or Ethereum the second time, or Ethereum the third time, they start going, wait a minute, like, hold on, all my friends are getting rich. And, you know, like, I'm not holding my assets. Same thing with Apple. Like, you know, there's plenty of people in 05, 07 that were fudding Apple and saying that the iPhone was stupid and this and that. And then here we are, right? Like, doing Twitter spaces on Androids and Apple phones, and like chatting with people all over the world. Same thing is happening with crypto now. I think I'm not too worried. And if we stick to quality platforms like Terra, you know, with extremely good tokenomics like Luna has, I don't really have too much concern. You know, as far as like if we make a further dip, that we won't come right back up. So like the concern we used to have when Bitcoin dumped, I don't know if you guys have been here since 2015, 2016, 2017, you know, like after the big drop from 20K to 3K, you know, there was not really a lot of utility for Bitcoin. So obviously it dumped the way that it did, from like a $17,000 delta from top to bottom. But there's a lot more utility of Luna than there right now than there ever was with Bitcoin then, right? So the idea that somehow that you're not going to get a bounce back. Well, first off, for Luna, like, does anyone here reasonably believe that we're going to retrace 75% again? I don't know. I'm not so, I think it's unlikely to me, but I've been wrong before. But, you know, a 50% drop, I suppose. That's happened to, you know, that's happened to blue chip companies like Apple, guys. So the idea that it can't happen in a crypto space, you should always be prepared for a 50 to 60% drop. If like mega blue chips like Apple can drop 60% with Steve Jobs' death or whatever, or even for that matter, the drop in equities during the pandemic dump, right? So if you've seen that, it was a pretty bad situation. And so you should never assume that you can't have a drop equally as bad, but anyway, AA, are you there?
Yeah. Hey, man.
What's up?
I appreciate you guys having the space. So I'm new to Luna. I've been like just soaking up like a sponge everything that Do Kwon is, you know, interviews and everything he's talking about. I'm thoroughly impressed. I guess I'm now an official lunatic.
welcome.
Thank you. And basically, I have a fund that me and my best friend started, and you know, we're on our way to like $1 million AUM, and we started to move some allocation into Luna as well. I got a couple of questions. Like, I started to get us into the auto compounding Psy in Luna on Spectrum. I'm not sure if there's more upside longevity or downside longevity. I'm a little uncomfortable like splitting my Luna between Psy and then like putting it into the 400% APY auto compounding. I'm afraid of like impermanent loss, like the long-term prospectus of Psy. I'm not real comfortable with.
Are you fairly well versed in like LP positions, or kind of you feel like you're amateur there?
I mean, I feel like I've got some decent experience with the upside potential and the downside potential. Like, I feel like it's nice in a falling market somewhat because of the, you know, it's a little bit of a hedge there to like, you're not exposed to 100% loss, but it seems like there's a pretty big correlation between like it seems like Psy and Luna both fall. So it's like, you almost have like, you're not gaining as much. Like if you had like a Luna stablecoin LP would be right, obviously more advantageous to somewhat of a hedge there. I just wasn't sure like what you guys suggested or if, like, and I have some allocation also in just the Nexus vault itself. It's like 9% APR. I don't know right, like, if one's better than the other, what your opinion.
That's basically just taking, your Luna, yeah, borrowing off of it, deposit on Anchor for the 20% earn. And it's getting you 9% because it can only get to like a 45% LTV.
Yeah, you got it.
So that's what that's doing. And it's fairly liquid because you can get your Psy token fairly easily. And you can exit your Luna out of there quite easily to be Luna, especially if you want to borrow off it on a moment's notice. So that's where I find that can be helpful. But yeah, the LP, how to do that right. The problem is it varies depending on the tokenomics under the underlying coins. One thing, like you mentioned, is you're going to face less sort of like impermanent loss and a better hedge if you're in a UST pairing as opposed to sort of like the Psy Luna pairing.
Yeah.
And the main reason for that is because you're suffering possible impermanent loss in two different coins at different times. Mm-hmm. And that can get really weird. Now, having bought, like, I entered the LP portion of my Psy. I entered it I definitely entered too late on that one. I you know, put PSI in there and I put some Luna in there, and now both are like, I've lost some Luna as a result, and I've lost some you know, valuation of the LP itself.
Mm-hmm.
I've gotten back like around how long has it been since that opened? Like maybe a few months, maybe 2 months. In the last couple of months, I got back at least 25% of that with the APY so far. So it really depends, obviously, on, because if you're saving that in PSI tokens, like you're auto compounding, for example.
Yeah.
Or so if you're staking in governance, that's one sort of outcome. Another would be you take your PSI and you convert to Luna immediately. Another possibility is you convert that to UST immediately, right? There's a lot of different things you can do with the actual LP reward token once it sort of hits your wallet, right? So,
but if you have
there's a lot of different strategies.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so if you have it on that spectrum that's auto compounding, it's essentially taking your Psi and splitting it between Luna and Psi and redepositing like continuously.
Exactly. But those auto compounders do indirectly for the ecosystem reduce the they create a constant sell pressure.
Yeah, that's my other concern too, because I've noticed that in the past.
So some of the new protocols have been talking about like building in methods to where auto compounders don't work. For this exact reason, because it misses the point of the governance token if it's always being sold. Like Mirror has this problem, Anchor has this problem. If the rewards token is always like going to be have a high sell pressure, then it'll take a number of years before all the tokens are distributed, and then finally price discovery can really like proceed to the upside. So this is the problem, and I think when it comes to LPs like that, especially with dual impermanent loss, I would definitely be super cautious about when your entry points are there.
Mm-hmm.
And also determining, hey, do I dollar cost average into this or what? Like, what is the actual optimal methodology for acquiring an LP?
That's what I've been doing so far. Is like every time it drops or dips, I put a little bit more in there. I haven't like aped into it or anything like that necessarily.
If you have the PSI UST as one of yours, what you could do is Astroport's coming out in the next what is the date today? The 11th. Yeah. So it's in a few days, you've got Astroport. You could take your PSI and do a UST pool there, and then you're basically farming the Astroport token. The beauty of doing that is you're getting the Astroport token essentially at cost, so to speak. And you're probably going to have a lot more upside than leaving it in the auto compounder. So pretty much anything I have in auto compounders right now, anything that I have in TerraSwap as a LP, and any spare governance tokens I have, like, for example, ANC in my governance or PSI and governance, I think I'm going to go ahead and park that shit on Astroport to get the max Astroport tokens. Because of all of these different protocols that we're talking about, Astroport's among the most sort of like uber blue chip of them all.
Interesting.
So like that would be a reason to acquire, like to farm that as opposed to farming the Psi token itself using this system. But in Astroport, the difference is you're also getting the Psi token too, by the way. Like you're getting both. You're getting that plus the Astroport token. Same as ANK. I believe ANK rewards are going to be migrated. So if you do the UST ANC pool, you're getting both the growth of the ANK. You're getting the transactional value of what happens on the platform in Astroport tokens that you're farming, plus you're getting still the ANK rewards for doing the LP.
Yeah.
So definitely look into that. And that's going to be opening like on the 14th.
Awesome. Hey,
that's this lock drop concept though, but read it over carefully because it is a time, like there's a time commitment to it.
Yeah.
But if you're concerned that, hey, I went into this PSI pool and, I'm down quite a bit and I'm like, what am I doing now? A way to possibly recover from that would be by, if it farms you enough Astro tokens and they go high, which I'm almost certain they will. These are the kind of things that usually 10x after they open, right? Or more. So it's probably worth it.
Okay.
And Astroport is like straight up a replacement for TerraSwap. So,
oh, hey, Blue. Nice.
Yeah. Hey, Seffy.
Hey, what's up? So anyway, yeah, does that answer some of that?
Yeah, definitely. I just had one other. I'm trying to like explain the profoundness of Luna to other people. And I'm like, obviously there's all kinds of different topics that I can bring up, but I'm thinking about like, it's almost like if, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's almost like if Ethereum, it's like an early Ethereum opportunity. And it's like, if Ethereum had a deflationary component to it, where it had a stable coin, like a native stable coin that it was trying to always maintain its peg, and it required essentially the deflation of Ethereum to do that. Am I correct in that thinking?
Yeah. And a good way, like I described the system to newbies is It essentially does everything all other DeFi platforms more or less do, but the it has better value mechanisms to grow the value of Luna than practically all of layer ones, right? Mm-hmm. So the UST mechanism is one of them. The transactional value on the network is the other one. You also have the fact that the inflation, the rewards are not inflationary like they are for all other coins. They're basically revenue based interest yield. And the other element is it's not just a little bit deflationary, but at least for the next few years, while UST's adoption rises, Luna is very deflationary for the time being. So right now is a great time to get it compared to, say, like a year from now when all the big protocols are already built into it and, you know, its value is going to be substantially higher. But like even compared to Solana, whose value is higher, or, for example, Cardano, which basically does nothing at this, well, I don't want to say nothing, but basically not much. And essentially you're looking at a tokenomics that is superior to pretty much everything in the top 10, including more deflationary than BTC and Ethereum. And so really, like, it belongs right now, Luna, my view, belongs at number 3 with, you know, a price that reflects its utility, which is probably more like, you know, $400 or $500 plus, like right now would be the proper valuation for what it does compared to all the crap in the market, right?
Yeah.
So like there's no obvious reason why the market cap of XRP makes any damn sense.
Yeah.
It's a stupid ass coin with just this idiotic tokenomics. Like, I'm not saying that they're not going to connect their banks and do whatever. And I'm not saying that ADA is not going to eventually, like, you know, have enough peer-reviewed research papers to get their shit together. But the reality is that, like, for the function of what Terra and UST do, the growth potential for the Terra global stablecoin system really is unparalleled in DeFi. Another thing to sort of mention is, and I think Fildo brought it up before as well, is that because the transactions on Terra are in UST and not in Luna, the beauty of that is just because Luna's price rises doesn't mean you're going to wind up having a system that's unusable like Ethereum.
Mm.
Right? Like you having to pay, like, you know,
yeah, however many
ETH to, you know, like $1,000 worth of ETH to get a transaction done in a busy time is obnoxious, obviously. But that won't happen with Terra.
Yeah. That's a nice hedge against that. I really didn't consider that.
Yeah, so this is the same problem like Phantom has, the same problem that like a lot of chains have. Another feature of Terra that like people don't really get is that all the geniuses of Cosmos, right, that created Tendermint, basically created the base layer of the Luna chain,
yeah,
the Terra chain. And whenever those people find lots of cool like innovations and shit, like the people like Sunny Agarwal at Osmosis or, you know, the folks at Cosmos, all of those improvements, security enhancements, all get translated ultimately to the chains that are based on Tendermint, mm-hmm, which include things like Luna, which things like the, you know, the Crow token, Atom, Akash, there's a whole bunch of them. But Cosmos as a general ecosystem has really decent overall development, and those developments tend to translate to Terra. Like, for example, when with IBC or inter-blockchain compatibility, you have the ability to use like the Kepler wallet, and you can trade Luna on and UST for that matter on like Osmosis, for example, right? So like the way to describe this is that Terra has all the benefits of Cosmos, and yet it was also one of the best designed tokenomics of all time.
Wow.
Like, I don't think there is anything better. So in other words, my general position on Terra is, and this is just like, of course, as someone who obviously has plenty of Luna at this point, is my general position is, like, you shouldn't even be in crypto if you're not in Luna.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's not even an obvious reason to be in anything else. So like, do this first and then monkey around with other shit is my take.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
you know, that's kind of my, you know, I mean, Bitcoin has its benefits as a decentralized trustless system, and, you know, it has its sort of like digital gold function, and maybe they'll create a lot of cool shit with Taproot and everything, and, develop, you know, sort of like quasi smart chains alongside it.
That's a big maybe.
Yeah, it's all maybes, obviously, but when with enough money, like sometimes anything's possible. But at this point, you get a tremendous amount of value from Terra that you really don't get in a lot of other places. Not to mention, if you're a newbie, like what else has the easiest UX and UI experience, right? Nothing. So that makes it easier for me to like onboard a friend or a family member.
For sure.
You know, where they kind of get it. So in other words, you can't underestimate the viral growth that happens when you have that kind of a user experience, right? That's why most people are on iPhones and ultimately on Androids, and like most everything else died off because it's actually difficult to create that user experience.
100%.
Hey, do you guys? I'm sorry.
Do you guys want to
go ahead, Gray?
Yeah. Do you want to hear my metaphor for explaining blockchain and inflationary versus deflationary?
Hit it.
So it took me a while to understand, right, that mining, what mining actually was. But how I basically explain it to people is, if I'm the validator and somebody's trying to give a cookie, you know, from person A to person B, in an inflationary world, when you hand the cookie to me and then I hand it to person B, I create a new portion of a cookie out of thin air. And that means there's more cookies overall, which means the cookie is less valuable, but I still get to keep some of the cookies. So I'm fucking happy to be a validator.
Right.
In a deflationary system, handing the cookie from A to B, it passes through me. I take a bite of the cookie. Now there's less cookie overall. I'm still happy because I got to eat some of the cookie, but person B gets less cookie overall and there's less cookie overall. So it's a deflationary system.
Yeah, and in crypto, the other thing too is on the proof of stake systems, the inflation is different for each coin too. So that's another thing to keep in mind. There are some coins that start out inflationary and then they become less so, or they like, I think it was Algorand or something, that it's inflationary until all the tokens are distributed and then it's not. And then, so there's different models of this too. In my view, it's sort of like this. Once you have one coin that is a real high quality that essentially has a aggressive deflationary model, the problem is, like, how can the other coins actually survive in that space, right? It's like you have a shark with a bunch of minnows going on. And what you wind up having is like, and I think I subliminally got that reference from Blue's NFT, by the way, or something. But basically, once a deflationary coin exists, whatever your personal philosophy is regarding like how a blockchain or a country or a human race should run as far as inflationary versus deflationary tokenomics, it almost doesn't matter, because it's like, it's sort of like once you have nuclear weapons out in the open, the whole world just has to live with them, right? And you have to build, you know, submarines and bases and nuclear power plants and ways to eliminate. So in other words, a structure forms around a deflationary system that you can't ignore at some point. Because what people do, and this is what I do, is they'll take their rewards from inflationary coins and they'll go buy the deflationary one, you know, whether it's Bitcoin, whether it's something else. So it tends to be a black hole on lots of other assets. And, you know, another thing that I always explain to people is, okay, if you think about how the Federal Reserve works, right, it's inflationary, but you, the saver, with money in your bank account, are not the one getting those inflationary rewards. They're being printed to just who knows who to lend out to who knows who. And you, the saver of your dollars or whatever currency you have in the world, you're the one getting screwed, right? At least if you own, say, for example, Cosmos or Polkadot, yes, there's inflation, but the inflation favors the saver at least. In fact, you really have to be a staker if you're going to bother holding them long term, because otherwise you're not – the inflation actually that those coins provide is a hedge against all the other people's coins that are entering the market, right?
Right.
But they're not necessarily like, you know, profit in the same sense, which is why I don't like the way the IRS deals with, you know, proof of stake assets, because if you think about it, you're getting paid because your coin is going literally down in value as time goes on. It's almost like if you own a stock and they just keep on printing stock year after year after year. Right. And you have to own it and stake it and claim those rewards in order to sort of overcome that. So the staking is not really so much profit, because ultimately in the long run, if you're a long term holder of like Polkadot or Cosmos, the problem is that they're actually inflating away the coin. But you can only prevent yourself from suffering that if you stake it, it's not so much that you're profiting from the yield, right? You guys see the difference. But this is why, like, when I have like Polkadot dips or Atom dips, I'll buy it, but then I'll take the yields because I can basically buy the dip, write up the price appreciation, sell the inflationary rewards, and buy myself more Luna with it. So when people ask, like, how come you always have money for more Luna? It's because, like, well, because this is what I do. Like, you know, there's always money for more Luna somewhere. It's just you have to, like, generate the revenue for it.
Yeah. So, you know, I watched this video on YouTube that was talking about, like, disruptive things in the last 15 years that have, that basically every tech disruption was about giving the masses what the wealthy had, right? Access to what the wealthy had. So private drivers, Uber, you know, private chef, Grubhub, meals to go, right? Now we have telemedicine. It's always bringing something that the wealthy had, a privilege that the wealthy had, and bringing it to the masses. Airbnb, you know, private condos for vacation, Airbnb. So what DeFi is bringing to the masses is the ability to have assets, to take an asset and to debt against it, and also to gain leverage. So those three things, assets, debt, and leverage, which you could only do with a house before. You had to have equity in a house. You get your mortgage, you build up equity, and then you use that collateral of house A to get a mortgage for house B, and then you put renters in house B, and then rinse and repeat, right? So that is a privilege that the wealthy had that DeFi is now bringing to the masses, and now you can do that with a $10 asset. That's what's...
You're democratizing capital, is what you're saying. Yes,
exactly.
Yeah, also, I just followed you.
Yeah, and also, like, if you look at Cosmos, what was their core philosophy was, hey, look, you know, eventually, if you don't have sovereign chains, right? You don't have a separate chain for Terra, you don't have a separate chain for Atom, for, you know, whatever. Then what ends up happening is you create a system that just has a lot of rent seekers. And the problem with a lot of rent seeking systems on top of layer ones is they're always going to suffer from losing some of the transactional value to layer one. So if you have a sufficiently important enough chain to build, then it makes sense to essentially use the freeware, which is the Cosmos ecosystem, and just build your own chain, get your own set of validators, and off you go. And then you also have governance that varies from chain to chain. So like if the philosophy of TFL and Doquan doesn't jive with you, you prefer one that's more inflationary or some other whatever, then you can just like pick the governance that you prefer. It's almost like moving to a country where you have a certain like, you know, political affiliation with or whatever. So yeah, a lot of interesting philosophical points that come into chain creation, not too different than creation of countries.
One thing I noticed also about, and I'm really excited about this, is the prevalence of DAOs and how they're actually becoming, it looks like they're becoming like a foundation of blockchain now. And anything that's not a DAO is going to have a lot of headwind in front of it to try to, you know, outcompete that, because, you know, anything great in technology has really been based in like open source. And I'm thinking like looking at the different chains and stuff and how Luna, it seems like right from the get, it's like, oh yeah, this is going to be also community participation heavy project. A lot of evolution that way. Do you guys ever see anything like an Ohm fork possibly coming to Luna? Like a high quality one?
Give me like 5 minutes.
Go ahead, Flu.
No, give me like 5 minutes. I'll get you one.
Yeah. Like an Ohm fork.
it's not that hard. I mean, I guess the barrier in this case is the fact that I can't just do straight Solidity. I don't know. Anybody want to pitch in? 5 USDT each. We'll go get us a dev. Yeah.
No, it's very much let me mute Gwei's mic because I think it's like he's got some noise in the background. But the concept of Ohm and what it's doing, it can essentially translate to a lot of different future protocols, even if it doesn't mean that you create a full copy of Ohm. Elements of that, and essentially some mixture of, like, you know, treasury ownership of protocols and such. And you know, some of the, you know, shenanigans behind Ohm and also Time and Abracadabra, the these kinds of systems are not too hard to replicate once the basic invention has been put forth. But this is also to some extent like what hedge funds sort of do, right? Like they're assuming that they're better at, say, managing assets than the average person. And the idea is that, well, you know, if I join a hedge fund and invest in one, then I have someone that apparently is smarter than me who can figure out what, how to make a better outcome. The unfortunate thing is that's not always true. Lucky for myself, you know, I outperformed, you know, nearly all the hedge funds on the planet, you know, like probably 99.9% of them. And I did not do so with their tactics, nor the like diversification that they generally recommend. I generally have a philosophy of sort of like going into something, if I can like get a sense of like what a winner actually is and stick with that. Like that worked well with me for Apple. It worked well for MasterCard, Visa. It worked out well for Terra. It worked out well for Bitcoin, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know, like sometimes having too many people like, you know, deciding by governance that they know what the hell they're doing may not actually be all that as productive as you think it might be. So
actually, let me talk on that for a second, Sevi, because you ran across something really important, which is that without the diversification that they sort of like require, that they suggest, and that's something that I talk about a lot in person with people at events and stuff, is that diversification is not to build wealth. Like, it's not to grow wealth, really. Diversification is to protect wealth once you already have it.
Right.
That's like what diversification does. It like protects it from risk. But in order to grow the wealth, you're either running with like something that you really, really believe in and you're going really heavy into it, which is what you did with Luna. And I mean, I don't know. Jury's still out on that one, right? But either that, or you're like investing in something, some sort of product that you're actually like doing yourself and like building from the ground up.
There's also something to be said about the idea that you don't necessarily, like, if you have certain assets with extraordinarily high like exponential growth potential, Stark ratios, like really high adoption growth or network effect growth potential, that you don't necessarily have to put a lot of money in those things to have a lot of growth.
Like, no, that's like the moon bag approach,
basically. Yeah, you don't have to go all in on it and then just think, well, you know, like imagine, like, so in other words, if you're all in on Luna and you bought it, you know, last week, you're like, oh, I think Luna's, you know, amazing and it's going to be life-changing, you know, wealth for me or whatever. And, you know, you spent your whole life savings on it and you bought it at like $80 and now it's at 60, you're sort of banging your head on the wall going, wait a minute, what do I do? And if you have enough money, you just like, will be very anxious about it too, right? You're going to be like concerned that, you know, and so it takes a certain amount. Once you get to a certain amount of money in something, it also takes a tremendous amount of conviction to keep your money in that thing when it dips, right?
Thanks for checking out another episode of The Ether. That was part two of a several-part CeFi space discussing exploits, bugs, proposals, Luna stuff, Terra stuff, all that stuff. We'll be back with part three and four and five for TerraSpaces.org. I'm Finn. Thanks for listening.